Reel 32. You've just described the system of desert navigation, in effect. What happened to you after this? You were still in the training situation in the desert.
Incidentally, getting back to that, finding resistance, of course, is of the speedometer of the vehicle. But, of course, any kid at school would tell you that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, not up and down the wadis and the escarpments. Nevertheless, you take that into account and add a few miles on it. And after my 11 miles, we stopped on the highest point because there was nothing there, but we looked around and it was there. It's great, you know. So that was my first, and I was rather proud of that, by the way, and it came in very handy later on by that. We, as I said, we did these exercises, and incidentally, it was not only teaching us how to get used to the American tank, but it was the first time that we had no problems of enemy or what have you. First time we were getting to know General Western Desert, because believe me, General Western Desert was just as wily as General Rommel. We began to live in the desert. For instance, it was that period when the technique, we did still have contact, of course, with the Delta, as we called the base. He came up with an idea. Could we build a refrigerator for the officer's mess lorry? You'll understand that when we're in open orderly divider, have I explained about these leaders? I don't think I have. When we're in the desert like that, standing down, way away from any action, what have you, except for, of course, the occasional air raid, we would stand in open orderly. That is to say, each vehicle, whether it be tank or lorry, would be at least 200 yards away from its neighbour in any direction. So you can appreciate the fact that the battalion covered probably 2 square miles. And in the centre of this, or approximately the centre, would be the cookhouse. And they would, for mealtime, they would put a flag up. Oh, it's mealtime, and everybody would. Because if you're on the outskirts of it, it's probably a mile walk, as it were. Incidentally, that was the same for church on a Sunday. The padre would bring his 500. He got two vehicles, by the way. It was a staff car and a 500-weight truck. And he would drop the small tailboard down and put the alternator, making it into an alternator, thing like that. And I always admired him for that. Whilst he looked after and saw to our comfort, he never thought of his own comfort. And so he put all his full regalia on, what have you, which had been sweltering on the back of there. And when he was all ready, he would put the flag up and we would come there. And I'll bet there's very few vicars or fathers or whatever you call them today has ever said that from his makeshift pulpit. Keep your hats on, lads, for the sun.
What was his name?
I don't know. Sorry, because incidentally, he was killed later on. I can't remember at all. Well, I should do. But I'm terrible for names.
So you're in open lager, as he called it.
Now, by the way, and I've got a picture there of our fitters of mine with our dormitory on the side. We're static, so we make ourselves as comfortable as possible. Spare tarpaulins and what have you, and whatever you made a lean-to, like they have on the caravans, you know. And we had camp beds as well. You went for the house, green with envy. But and this photograph is showing you that. And it's got the camouflage net, which is not covering the lorry at all. It happens to be covering our dormitory, as it were, simply because the sun was casting the shadow onto the dormitory. You camouflaged the shadow of your lorry. your vehicle is already camouflaged. It's very difficult to see from the air, but the shadows. And that used to be a chore. As the sun goes round, you have to rearrange your camouflage in that every day, going round and round and round, like that. Also, on that picture, you see the old vehicle with its bonnet up, simply because we were charging batteries and we were trying to keep the engine as good as possible. Why charge batteries? Well, all vehicles in an open order leader, all vehicles that can shed their load, did so. And each night, each vehicle would then become a get-together, a soiree, as it were, you know. Oh, you have seen students and all right, let us all in there. But you couldn't do that if the ends of the lorry sheet was up. You know, you couldn't have lights in. Blackout, everything, and you'd have... So we were using batteries, lorry batteries,
for lighting.
Yes, sir. And as I say, I think I began saying about this, we want the Italian technical office wanted to make a refrigerator from the officer's mess, lorry, which was the officer's mess. They'd get in there for chatting away.
You made this refrigerator.
We made this refrigerator, and it actually worked. But, of course, it was, I forget now, an absorption cigarette. The principle was that from a crashed aircraft, we got these small oxygen bottles, and rather like a miniature-sized oxyacetylene bottle, very, very high pressure thing. We got a couple of these, and what you did is you filled one with ammonia, which we kept in office that one. Then spare petrol pipe, of course, pipe through into a cooler, and then into a full petrol tin again, of course, which was army blankets over and what have you for insulation, what have you. And then inside there, we'd have on the in line. In the circuit, the pipes, petrol pipes that we were using, we put it into a fitment which we made, which you could control the pressure. And then, and instead of blowing the ammonia into the air, it was put into a coil which went around the inside of the petrol tube and into the second collector, which was in another one of these bottles. The theory being, of course, that if you've burnt your hands, what do? You blow on them. Simply because Boyle's law, the pressure of gas is released, the temperature goes down. And this is exactly what we do. The gases here was, of course, pneumonia. And in that regulator, with it being heated, it's under pressure, probably quite high pressure as well, probably 100 pounds. Thing is, we were letting it down to a very small pressure, and that was cooling this oil. And it actually worked. But as I say, every half hour, we had to stop, let it cool off, and so it opened your pressure regulator, to suck it all back into the heater again, and then start all over again. We found a far better way of keeping our drinks cold. These American tanks were fitted with fire extinguishers, carbon dioxide. Only a tree break at it, but of course you didn't do it too often because the storm was saying, hey, we don't mind the odd one. So when we were in open leader, what we would do was we'd leave our we had a big 5 gallon, like a suitcase actually, but water. Anyway, what we leave that out all night and dampen the, because it had a canvas over it, and the evaporation would get really cold in the night. Then first thing in the next morning, before the sun rose, we'd already done the treachery, down by the lorry, put it in the hole, cover it up, right you are, and we've got a pipe there with a pump to the top. Then we turn, and during the day, if you wanted a cool drink of water, just pump it up. It was icy cold, beautiful. So, you know, I could go on all day telling you.
Were you training with infantry?
No.
No. It was just purely the tank battalion.
Tanks, yes.
Were you part of a brigade again by this time?
22nd Armoured Brigade, if I remember rightly. May not be sure because...
I think it was the 4th.
4th.
At this particular time. It was 22nd later.
4th.
4th Armoured Brigade, yeah.
4th. Yes, I think that rings a bell. Was that... did that have an hippopotamus sign or something? Anyway, we did have one time hit the bottom of the sign of it, but actually it's the 4th Armoured Brigade. But anyway, we of course training and what have you in a featureless desert, you do get bored time to time, even though we made our own entertainment. So we'd have a sports day, organised a sports day, which of course had the usual running and jumping and what have you, and high jump, and whatever. By the way, I won the high jump. but also another effort, and that is the long spit.
I think we've got this, actually. I think you mentioned this long spit. You would have mail coming through, did you?
Mail started coming through. Oh, yes. Oh, it would be, yes. Now then. At Benny Youssef, going back a bit, Benny Youssef, that's what it is. I got a mail, a letter, my mother's been working on, that way, she was a Victorian, your father had died. So I do remember that, was somehow that strengthened me later on, because I thought, well, you know, somebody's looking after me. I don't know, but at the time, it was really, really sad. In other words, when I waved him goodbye on the platform at Newcastle Central Station on Battle of Britain Day, the last time I saw him.
And were your comrades and the officers of the battalion, did they realise this had happened to you? And
no,
were they sympathetic?
No, it was quite private.
Private.
Yeah. Didn't oh, no, well, thank goodness they were like that. Come on, you know, and what have you, and they're probably older. They're quite private on that score. But getting back to this desert, if you like, that seemed to take up quite a lot of time, but we weren't in the one spot entirely. Because on another occasion, we were again in Oban Overlieger. We were right on the outside. And there was the telltale two humps, two heaps of spoil, which marked, of course, and I don't know which one it is, a beer, B-E-R-E. And then we didn't have any problem about rationing the water, certainly not alone at all. And we had to go down to it because you appreciate the fact that even though it was a very small opening, and it goes down to the mortar table and then opens right out, even though that's a small opening, the success of sandstorm, there was a pile underneath, and when you look down, you could see nothing but dry sand. You had to go down, and the sand, of course, was like a pyramid at the bottom. You go down the side of the pyramid, and the water was there, and you know, that sort of thing, but it was incidentally, whilst talking with water, on our retreat back from Merseyside or what have you, some bright spark, some wonderful, brilliant bloke decided we'll teach the Germans. So they salted all the beers as it came back. Not teach them, salt water to drink. I never thought about when we went back to the desert, we had ourselves idiots. And by the way, a lot of people say you couldn't live on salt water. You can't live on seawater, but seawater consists of far more than salt. You can live on salt water. I tell you.
When did you realise that your training was over and you were starting off, you know, back into action again, moving up to the front?
I can't remember any date at all, but it cannot be, as I say, we've had these various places, it cannot be very far away from 1940.
The first day of the advance for Crusade was the 18th of November.
That would be when we went.
And you were in that the armoured brigade you were in were part of that. What are your memories of that particular event?
Now, before the sort of the manoeuvring up to the, because we're coming up to the Battle of Civilization here, the logistics of a desert operating battalion. It got itself into trouble, and the whole of the transport of the battalion was divided into two, B echelon being the largest, all the not wanted unvoyaged stuff was kept well out of harm's way. A echelon, which supplied the tanks with their immediately wants, petrol, oil,
ammunition,
all that business, they were kept as near the tanks as possible, or not causing too much enemy action. Now, if anyone's got any idea of we brave fitters going into action with nothing, dressed in overalls and a box of spanners and nothing else, what brave people we were, I suppose we would have been if we'd been called on to do that very often. It was very seldom that we were called upon to see to a tank in action. Thank goodness, because we always came away and we'd always get something wounded. But these tanks, of course, needed attention, although they were heavy tanks. And we used to do our heavy work at night time, throughout the night. Now, at night time, when we were in the battle area, we may not be in battle altogether, but in near the battle area, and certainly when we were in battle, we would go into what we call a close Oberliga, which is completely different from an Oberliga. The tanks would, they would decide where the previous day going to be briefed on what we'd expect in the head. But there's always one thing certain, it's a regular, and we will go to for our open and close order leader at map reference such and such, right? Which was probably behind where Jerry was. Gaining territory meant nothing. Jerry would probably come up, in fact we don't. One night we heard him go past. But anyway, we would decide we'd come into this in a place in the desert, just picked at random, I suppose, where we'd have our close order leader, where the tanks would be on the outside, guns, everything facing out, and one member of each crew would be awake at all times, you know. And on the inside, of course, was the thin skins, the lorries, the vulnerable. Like the old Wild West wagon trains, circled up against an Red Indian at. And that's where we fitters would do our biggest amount of work. In other words, what I'm saying is that we did a 24-hour shift each day. You couldn't go to sleep there because we would be called upon any time to attend a tank. Or move because the battle's coming our way. So you couldn't sleep during the day, and you certainly could not sleep during the night. Well, you cannot do 24 hours a day ad infinitum. no way can you do it. You can do it on an hour or probably an hour and a half sleep, but you get very, very disoriented. Therefore, there in Eshelon, they only had two fitter's wagons. The other two, because the fitter's wagon for each squadron, four squadron, the other two fitter's wagons were down at the Eshelon. They would work night and day for at the outside a week, no more. Then they would swap over and they would go on the rest. Righto. As the battle of Operation Crusader was getting underway, I've omitted something about that close order leaguer. But anyway, as it got underway, the nightly supply column from B Echelon, bringing a few ammunition batches and what have you, was lost. It was taken prisoner, in other words. Now, the loss of the next day's supply of petrol and ammunition could easily be afforded because ammunition and petrol wagons were kept fully stocked at all times. They were only making up the stock. We could afford to lose them. The rations, well, you couldn't come without rations. But the loss of 50% of the battalion's maintenance facilities altogether a different kettle of fish. And especially when, a few days afterwards, the one of the two remaining fitter's wagons became casualty. Not only that, three of the six fitters on my wagon became casualties. Three of us.
Very briefly before we go on, can you, the system of supply would be that there'd be a dump way in the rear, which would pick up whatever, and then B Echelon, they would be brought up to B Echelon, and then to A Echelon, and then in. That was the way it was done, yes. So the B Echelon in this particular case had gone.
B Echelon was perfectly okay. You see, that's what I should have said when we were explaining about a close order leaguer, is that each night, a convoy from B Echelon, the minimum amount of convoy that's required, from B Echelon, would rendezvous with A Echelon, supply up, and then return back to B Echelon. B Echelon was our base. And of course, as you say, they would be supplied from further back by the service corps, of course.
And in close leaguer, you would be filling up every tank with ammunition,
yes,
petrol, whatever.
That's where the cavalry training came in, you see. You looked after your steed before you looked after yourself. Now, here's something which will probably surprise you. It surprised everyone I've told so far. But I would say it would be once every other night we'd get a tank on fire. Just imagine, the tanks have come in. Everything's red hot, which you've got to fill up with petrol. And I just said that we were using aircraft engine. High octane fuel was being used for that. So, you just need a blink and that gets on fire, okay? So, what we used to do is the man that's going to fill up, there's four LNG cans, he was up on the tank, he's going to fill up, he would put every bit of clothing he possibly could put on, with gloves and everything, plus his mask. The petrol tank can would be punctured ready, handed up to you, and then you retreat. Two fellas or three fellas with fire extinguisher either side. It'd be clock, 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 and of course it's slopping over on the red hot exhaust. And it was a column of flame. Out. And that used to happen, well, certainly once every three nights. And we did use an awful lot of fire extinguisher under those sort of circumstances. But what else could you do? You couldn't wait, because one night we did, don't we? And by the way, of course, we were told no noise, and that was difficult for refitters. By the way, how do you use a sledgehammer at night without making a noise? as the night went on, and this is where we did have wireless, we would know, of course, good old cavalry reconnaissance, they would know where Jerry was, and they said, yes, you can use, tell your fitness, use sledgehammer, whatever. If not, of course, if there was a bogey spindle that we changed, we'd get the tank next to a thing like that, and we jack it out using the tank. And we've pushed the tanks apart rather than, it's difficult, but very difficult work. And by the way, the tank crews that were sleeping, like I said, there's only one, didn't they? They were sleeping alongside the tank, and they said, right, well, I'm going to change this bogey, and they would even know that, of course, so they would leave that space clear. Now, when those tank crews went to sleep, they didn't sleep. They died. They actually died. One night, I swung a sledgehammer within a foot of a sleeping tank crew's head. It never disturbed the looking of his story.
Very deep sleep.
Yeah. In fact, they started nicknaming the name of those three Silent Night Fitters. Because the three of them make no noise, you've never done that. We have, we've not. Oh, well, they come up, you know. Oh, and another night. Oh, dear me. Because, as I say, the old man, by the way, the colonel, decreed that the man that had had his sleep would have him go around with each of us for the sole purpose of keeping us awake. We had to keep the battalion's tanks going, the three of us. Anyway, one night I was getting batteries out, changing batteries. And of course, there was heavy dew that night. It was many nights later. And I let go and I slid off the turret, dump onto the ground where the tank crew was laying asleep. I didn't get out, but anyway, I got out and it had landed between the bed rolls. And not only that, it hadn't split, otherwise it had been acid everywhere, I said, no, no, not a lot of things. But it had been really bad,
So in a closely lager like this, although the enemy may be close or whatever, it was a proper beehive, a hive of activity, except for the tank crews who were sleeping.
That's right. Now, can I tell you another the fitter's lorry was the only lorry that was blacked out. So what better place was for the colonel to debrief his squadron commanders and discuss the following day's work, put in it. And so I've been in working, in the vice world, while they're discussing what, and I must tell you this story because it's really funny. They were organising, code names, so why was it? Code names for various things that follow, because change the names each day. Oh, by the way, our sergeant's name was Brommel. Guess what our code name was on occasion? Sent for Rommel's party. But anyway, they'd all finished what happened. I was busy with the work. I didn't listen a great deal. But this, this come up. They'd all finished when one of the majors said, oh, bloody hell. We haven't got a code name for the Close Order League map reference for the following night. The majors, bloody arseholes, because they were all waiting to get Elizabeth asleep at least, And the colonel, picking an eyelid, says, thank you, Claude, that's a very good idea. Yes, the code name for the Close Order League map reference next night, that night will be arseholes.
Who was Colonel?
Colonel Drew. Yeah.
A good man?
Oh, aye. And by the way, his nickname was Detention Drew. I can tell you what sort of...
I think we've got it now, with you mentioning detention. We've got that on tape.
We can follow him anyway. But, this, by the way, for getting back to my little story, the sergeant, corporal, and myself, private, tour, kept that battalion of tanks going for a fortnight.
This was because of the losses that you'd had.
Then we withdrew. He said, come inside, we'll pay you the mega. And of course, we tried dealing with beer, of course, which he didn't drink naturally. But anyway, we paid him his money eventually and gave him a little bit in hand. And he went out. And the reason for that was we wanted him to get away from his gurry. And when he went out, his gurry was there, absolutely, but the shafts of the gurry had been pushed through the rail, and his horse
on the other side.
On the other side.